Once more onto the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English.
And I didn't hear you at all there, so... Your microphone's up, and we're hearing something.
Yes.
That's much better than
hello.
That. Hello. Okay, we're going to try this again.
All right, one more time.
Once more under the breach, dear friend. Oh, yes. This is why, folks, this is why we say once more under the breach, because we never know what's going to work and what's not going to work. All the knobs were set right. It just took a little banging on it. Anyway, we're going to do this again. Okay. Okay. Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead. The microphone up with our English dead. Yes.
This completely... Let's do it again.
Okay, one more time.
Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting first hour of the 2 hours of the Personal Wealth Coach on this Saturday, October 31st, 2015. Whew. Wow, we managed to actually get the introduction in. Can we go home now?
Yep. Okay. All right, we're ready.
Okay.
Done.
And I'm supposed to tell you at this point that the Personal Wealth Coach is not only a radio program, it is also the name of an investment advisory firm headquartered in Salado, Texas, the place where the traffic right now is the worst on the planet, I think.
Yeah, I would say it's pretty bad.
I don't think traffic can get any worse than stopped. And if you're going south, at least a few moments ago, from our point of view, if you were trying to go south on I-35 through the metropolis of Salado, you weren't. There were trucks and cars backed up from Salado to about Belton. And so there really isn't much of an alternative route unless you go over to like 95. Or you go a long ways out of your way, and I have no idea when they're going to open the highway up again. And it's supposed to be closed southbound this evening, although who knows how long, just overnight. However, there's no telling how long will actually be closed this evening. So if you're trying to travel through the metropolis of Salado today from the Temple Belton area, I wish you good fortune, good cheer, good luck, and tell you in advance that I hope you have a lot of patience. Does that make sense? That's the news.
Yeah, there's the news. The news.
Okay. Well, you know, we could talk about what happened this last week, which what we normally do, because weekly, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and I was really surprised to see this, was up 0.1%.
For the week.
For the week. And S&P 500 was up 0.22% for the week.
That's very exciting news.
It is. NASDAQ was up 0.43%.
Anytime we're using decimals at the beginning of the words, we know the news is...
unexciting.
Extremely exciting for no one.
The big news is, at least I thought it was pretty exciting, and I didn't see any big headlines on this.
What's the big news? Well, it's not big news if you don't have headlines.
In terms of points,
uh-huh.
You know, a point being like the
what
Dow Jones Industrial
Super
Average is 1,763. Aww. In terms of the number of actual points,
mm-hmm.
both the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500 rose more this week than at any point in this month in the month of October. They actually had a greater point rise than they've ever had at any month in history.
That's one of those strange things where we think that there are some cool records that should be talked about, and the media thinks that other records are more important than the ones that we talk about, and we think they're silly, and that they probably think we're silly. And together, all the economists point fingers at each other and say, you're silly. On the other hand, you're silly too.
But the stock market... by whatever measure you want to measure it, including the global stock market.
By whatever measure you want to measure.
You got okay. it. By whatever methodology, and whether you want to use inches or feet or millimeters or, you know, square root of
atomic
the speed
weight.
Of light. Well, the speed,
let's
you know, light
atomic
years.
Weight.
You can try light years.
Light years. There we go.
By whatever measure you wish to measure. Stocks for the month of October, which is ironic, rose a lot, like around 8% on average. If you take all of the various indices and various ways of measuring the stock market, what you'll find is that for the month of October, stocks were up around 8%. Some of them were up around 9%, and some of them were just below 8%.
Can we annualize that, like with the Bureau of Economic Analysis?
We've got to
seasonally adjust those returns and then annualize them. So seasonally adjusting them will.
Well, I don't know if we can seasonally adjust it because I don't know how to season.
What seasoning
do you want to use?
Garlic and salt. I think those are good seasonal adjustments.
That increases
right, because it's going to be much more delicious. And then we'll annualize it, which just means we let it sit for a year. No, that's not. Maybe times 12.
Well, actually, times 12 would be simple, but actually what you have to do is you've compounding times
right,
12.
It's compounding.
It would actually be 96% times 12, but ooh, it's actually up over 100% if you compound it.
Mm.
If we were to take this month and we were to project it, which incidentally is what they do routinely on quarterly
right,
stuff.
Right, it doesn't make any sense when you do that.
Like the 1.5% GDP for the third quarter wasn't 1.5% for the third quarter.
No.
If the third quarter GDP growth, as it was in the initial guess, and it's just a guess.
Wait, let's give some baseline to everybody. The Bureau of Economic Analysis, which most people have never heard of.
It's full of bureaucrats.
It's a bureau. By definition, it's full of bureaucrats. They just came out with their advance estimate.
Which translates into English as guess.
We're guessing that it's this. So their advance estimate, which is the first guess that they give on GDP, just came out.
Which is actually a swag.
Right. I'm not even sure it's a swag. It's more like a wag.
Well, it's actually a swag because there's some data behind it.
There's some data. The estimated data.
And by the way, those of you who don't know what a swag is, a swag is a scientific wild-assed guess.
And by ass, we do not mean the bad word. We mean the...
the four-legged animal.
The four-legged animal.
Oh, the wild ass.
Right.
As opposed to the tame ass.
And if you've ever had them guess for you, you know that they're not very good at it. But when there's science involved, they're still not very good at it. But there's science involved.
Right.
So we can say the swag, which is otherwise known as in the parlance of the Bureau of Economic Analysis.
Initial first estimate.
The advance first
advance.
Estimate.
Advance.
We will come out with a current estimate.
Does the last one retard it?
I don't know that they ever say that there's a last one. I think they leave it open. No, they leave it open that they can go back and revise any estimate on GDP going. There's no statute of limitations. 40 years ago, nope, GDP was up. We're going to add 0.1% to that particular GDP
right.
figure.
Got it.
Because,
right.
You know, we got to get these data points right. But they're all estimates. So they came out this week and said that the third quarter annualized seasonally adjusted growth was 1.5% for our country,
right.
United States.
Right. But that's the initial swag.
And they said there were some surprising numbers in there. In that our exports went up. They expected exports to go down. Our exports went up. Okay, that's good to know.
Government spending was down.
Government spending was down, but
state
and local government spending was up.
Mm-hmm.
And the state and local government spending going up caused kind of a little boost in the GDP.
But there was a serious issue of lack of buying for inventory.
Yes. But there was. Economists don't say lack of buying. We don't say people didn't buy stuff. We say inventory drawdown, because who wouldn't?
Right.
If you had the
right.
choice of saying you didn't buy stuff or...
It's like disinflation.
There's an inventory drawdown. Yes.
We don't say deflation anymore. We say disinflation.
Disinflation.
Yes.
Right. Or negative growth.
You know,
wait a minute. You don't... That's shrinkage, dude.
And your tire is disinflated.
I have a disinflated tire. Could I have some help with that? Just assume an air pump. Those are jokes only economists think are funny.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I laughed at it, which should tell you something. But it's it is. I'm going to have to say you this, folks. I told you so. I told you so.
Right.
Incidentally, Bill Gross once again,
the maven of bonds,
has proven himself valuable, even though he left PIMCO in a huff.
Well, he didn't leave in a huff. They huffed at him, and he left.
Well, he was huffing as he left.
He's left now, and now he's huffing.
He's huffing back, and now yes. He's at Janus, which the irony of him being at Janus is overwhelming to those of us who study such things.
Very ironic, yes.
Janus basically has the hot manager for whatever is about to collapse at any given moment, and they seem to make a lot of money doing that, which is astonishing to me.
That's actually the best marketing you can do. Just look at the things that have done really, really well.
Hire the hot manager.
Hire the hot managers there, and you're going to make a lot of money. Even though things that have been doing really well.
Your investors lose a lot of money.
Yeah, the concept, everybody goes, oh, hot manager, let's go to them. They've been doing great. Well, that means buy high. And in the old adage, buy low, sell high, that's the reverse of what you do.
That is Bill Gross's mantra, buy high, sell low.
Right.
I mean, he is, the reason I said that he has proven his value again is in August of 2002, he stated, the market has a lot farther to fall. Don't be tricked by this and think that it's the market bottom.
Well,
in 2009, I think it was March, whenever the bottom hit in 2009, he again made the same proclamation.
I think there's in saying the market has a lot further to fall, he's covering his bases though, because if you're on a cliff, and you have a 1 foot drop in the cliff, and you caught by the rope, and you start climbing again, your buddy could say you have a lot further to fall. Without really meaning that you're actually going to do it.
Well, I think this is more of a case of having fallen off the cliff. Everybody else fell off the cliff. They're at the bottom of the cliff, and he said, you've got a lot further to fall.
Right.
Because you could fall to the center of the earth.
Right. Because that's anyway, where gravity is pulling us.
The point is that in August, September, or August, when the market did in fact hit bottom, that day, Bill Gross came out and said, this is not the bottom. It has a lot further to fall, which I wrote in my newsletter at the time. Okay, good sign. Bill Gross just said we have a lot further to fall. That means it's the bottom. And sure enough, it was.
It worked.
And by the way, had you invested in, and I don't recommend you do so, had you mysteriously and mystically invested in the S&P 500 stock index on the day that Bill Gross said, don't invest in the market at this point. If you're out of the market, stay out. If you're not out of the market, get out because it's got a lot further to fall. Had you invested on that day, which is just over a month ago,
you would have made a lot of money.
You would have had about 11.5% gain in your S&P 500 futures contract or whatever.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah, and so Bill Gross continues to be a really, really good indicator for the market.
Well, as we would call disinflation, disinflated tires, negative growth, we would say...
He's a contrary indicator.
He's a negative corollary.
Oh.
There we
wow,
go.
I never would have thought to call Bill Gross a negative corollary.
Hello, negative corollary. What did you call me, sir? That's an insult.
And one of the things I wrote in the letter that I published yesterday that is so true is this month is an example of why market timing doesn't work.
Right, because the market's watch is broken. If you're trying to time it, you're going to mess up.
But and the reason I say that is, a lot of people were yelling, and there were certain indicators in August that the market might be about to fall.
Mm-hmm.
Although nobody anticipated that the Chinese Yang, whatever that market index is.
Which one? There's three of them.
The one in Shanghai.
That's called the Shanghai index.
Yeah, but it's called something else in Chinese.
Right. We don't speak Chinese.
Yeah, but okay. I've actually heard it stated as the Yangtze or something like that. Anyway, the that index fell, and that was theoretically the reason. Actually, as I have told you before, if you listened before, presuming that someone is listening still, it was because the big decision makers at the major Wall Street firms were on vacation. And any rate, so the market tumbled, but there's no reliable indicator when to buy back in. What's the name of the?
Well, you're talking about, if you're saying the Shanghai index, it's the Shanghai index. If you're talking about the Hang Seng.
Oh, index, Hang Seng.
That's the Hong Kong index.
Hang Seng Shanghai.
Right.
Shanghai Hang Seng.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Hang Seng. I knew Sin was involved in there somewhere.
Right. Well, of course.
You know, I mean, obviously. But the Shanghai was Shang Lo for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, at the moment when Bill Gross was proclaiming that stocks had a lot further to fall, and particularly Chinese stocks had a lot further to fall, he also made that statement. Had you invested in the Shanghai index at that point, which you, to the best of my knowledge, can't actually do, although somebody may have cooked up a ETF for that. I cooked up an ETF for everything else. Had you done so,
that's what you
you would have had about a 20% gain.
Anytime somebody says seasonally adjusted, by the way, I think cooking up.
Right.
Somebody's cooking the books to seasonally adjust it.
That makes perfectly good sense.
I mean, it fits the definitions, I think.
Yeah, well, that I like that. My food is seasonally adjusted.
Yes, I seasonally adjust my food quite regularly.
If you ever try to eat food, and almost any food that has no seasoning in it whatsoever,
yeah, this is pretty...
and then you put seasoning in it, you're seasonally adjusting the food.
Right.
And it tastes a lot better after you seasonally adjust it.
But probably not a good idea to annualize it, unless it's wine.
I don't know.
Sometimes cheese, I suppose, would be good
annualized.
Yeah, I think
cheese and wine can be annualized.
Beef, probably not so much.
I don't know this.
You would have to have it at a very, very cold temperature to annualize.
Well, you know,
aged beef,
the very best aged beef, believe it or not. I think I read this, actually is aged for a full year.
Well, it's annualized.
So that's annualized.
I guess you can annualize. Some things you can annualize and wind up with something better.
While the beef is still on the hoof,
you annualize it then.
Then you know the annualization.
Right.
Because you know how old the steer is that you're about to butcher and eat. And although, if there's any vegans?
Vegan, I think, is someone from the moon Vega. So I think it's vegan if you're talking about no animal products.
There's no moon Vega. There's a star Vega. It is, matter of fact, one of the brightest stars. It may be the brightest star in the night sky. It's right up there. It's one of the top few. It's maybe number one.
It's also a crater on the moon.
Venus, I think somebody from Venus is a vegan or vegan. Anyway, yeah. I don't know. It's pretty
big. There's
vague.
A crater on the moon that is Vega as
it
well.
Really?
So, yeah.
There's a Vega crater on the moon?
Uh-huh.
There's definitely a star named Vega, but I don't think there's a moon named Vega.
See how educational this show is? We should change
show.
That. We should,
show,
the next
tell.
Moon we find, we will name it Vega.
That would be way too confusing because we have two astronomical objects with the same name floating around out there, little bright spots in the sky.
I don't know what the problem is. Nobody can remember all those numbers anyway.
You don't have to. You have computers. Anyway, this is the Personal Wealth Coach.
And we are silly.
As I said earlier, A, we're silly, which... just generally means that we're economists, because all economists are silly. And secondly, some of them just don't know they're silly. That's the difference.
Yes. I'm not silly. Well, by definition, you've just admitted that you are.
Secondly, if today is Halloween, where you are, in the year 2015, then you can give us a call in here at either locally 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. I did have a message sent to me yesterday, or day before yesterday.
Congratulations.
Saying that I needed to talk about the currency market. Okay,
well,
now we've talked about it.
What is the current news on the currency market?
Currency market. There's some kind of blurbs here and there in the world of economists. They're kind of bigger blurbs than little ones.
I got to comment on the currency market.
And what they're saying is that there's a lot more volatility in the currency market than there has been for a while, because there's a lot of, they call them SWF, which in the terminology of the classified section of the newspaper is single white females. But in economist speak, there's nothing that sexy ever. So
is that anything to do with S by SW?
No, that's
SXSW.
That's down in Austin. No,
okay.
SWF is sovereign wealth funds. So these are the big,
or single white females.
Or single white females. Yes, but not as sexy.
I think there's a correlation there.
So Russia and SWF China and Saudi Arabia and all the people that we've been talking about for the last decade increasing their sovereign wealth funds and having all this profit from all these other things coming in there. and them saying, look at us, we have no debt, and we have this huge amount of money. Well, that money is pouring back into the market because they need to spend it. And they're spending it on things like food and weapons, and that's affecting the stability of the currency market because they're selling U.S. treasuries at weird intervals, and they're selling the pound, and they're selling the euro, and all these things are happening. And there are people that say it's going to get worse before it gets better, but the reality is that there is so much out there that the amount of volatility that we're seeing is actually pretty small.
Frankly, as individual investors, unless you who are listening to us are in fact a mega institution, which is a little scary that a mega institution would be listening to us.
Well, what if I am? What if I am a mega institution in my own mind?
Well, then you just do your own thing.
I'm not listening anyway.
But if, as an individual, trading in the currency market is somewhat worse than a crapshoot.
I trade in the currency market in my wallet.
I'm talking about foreign exchange trading with the intent of profiting from movements.
I'm going to buy this currency with that currency and vice versa.
Yeah, that's a scary area, and anybody who ventures into that area, a lot of the profit that is made by the smaller currency brokers who pander to individual investors is simply made by the money lost by individual investors. It's somewhat worse than the odds in the currency market if you're making money are significantly worse than they are at a casino.
Well, that's odd.
Or even, as the case may be.
Right. Right.
There is something I think fascinating going on in the currency markets.
Oh,
actually, it's not really.
Wait a minute. Fascinating to whom?
To anyone.
Oh, well, then let's hear it.
When the euro first came out, I don't remember the exact exchange rate, but I remember rather rapidly it went to like 170 per dollar. So the euro was like it took $1.70, as I recall, and I may be wrong here. We visited Europe, my wife and I, a number of years ago.
Which number?
A number.
Zero is a number.
Well, I don't know if it is a number. It's sort of imaginary because you have to imagine a zero. But it was several years ago. We went to Ireland, and we noted that the euro was at about $1.50 at that point. And Friday at the close, the reports that I have been able to find say that the euro did something sort of interesting, or the dollar did, depending on how you approach it. You can buy 1 euro for $1.09.
When it opened, it was at 85 cents.
You have to go back the other way.
What I'm saying, when the euro first opened,
it was 0.85 euros.
January of 99.
To the dollar.
It was 0.85 euros, or it took 86 cents or so to buy
dollars?
1 euro.
Really?
Yeah.
So that it appreciated rather dramatically.
Right, and then it went I guess it's the other way around.
It was 0.85 80, euros
yeah,
0.85 to the dollar.
Yeah, 0.85 euros to the dollar, and then...
You need to reverse that.
Right. So now
how many dollars does it take to buy? I mean, how many euros can it buy with $1?
Right.
And or vice versa. Anyway, the point is, it's down below $1.10. And there's another thing going on that relates to the currency market. I mentioned this again in the newsletter, that I thought was pretty fascinating, one of the most fascinating things that this particular geeky economist has seen recently, and that is the Italians brought to market last week a set of 2-year treasury notes, Italian treasury notes.
Right, and Italians are not known for their ability to repay their debt.
Yes, and I don't know if you remember this, but one of the reasons everyone is really, really scared of a Greek default was they figured the Italians would go right behind them.
Right. If we talked about the problem.
Because they owed so much money.
The acronym that people threw around about the problems of Europe was PIGS.
PIGS, right.
The Portugal, Italy. Italy was one of those. Greece and Spain.
Right. And that, so
Ireland was in there too, but they're not part of the euro.
Just a couple of years ago, In order to borrow money for 2 years, Italy had to pay 8%. And if you think about it, if you went to buy a house,
that wouldn't be a very good.
And somebody said, "We will loan you the money on your house at 8%." You would say, "You must really have a lousy credit rating." And that was true of the Italians. And their credit rating really hasn't improved. Their debt to GDP ratio has gotten worse over the last 2 years. But the
prime minister that they used to have, that was out having parties with prostitutes that were underage, is
right.
No longer the prime minister.
Well, that makes all the difference.
So there you go.
The Italians, I think, have broken the world record for the number of governments.
Right.
In a short period of time. At any rate, the Italian 2-year treasury note was brought to market, and the bidders, the people who invest in these things, came in and they all clamored around and they made all their bids and they bought them all. Well, that's pretty amazing all in and of itself. But they bought them all at a negative 0.0023% interest rate.
Negative.
They bought that at, in other words, they will pay the Italians over the next 2 years 0.23% per year to allow them to loan money to the Italians for 2 years.
Wow.
Isn't that nice?
That's a very nice deal.
The Italians,
I want my mortgage set up that way.
Maybe it is. Bank,
you have the opportunity loan me some money, and in the process, by allowing you to loan me money for my house,
you
will let you pay me money every month.
It's already going on in Switzerland.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Germans have been doing it too, but Italians are not Swiss.
But the Italian, literally, in Switzerland right now, if you get a mortgage on your house, a 15-year mortgage on your house, the bank pays you money to have the mortgage for 15 years.
Now you have to pay back the principal, but they're paying you interest.
Yeah, right, and they actually credit you with a little extra principal each month to pay you back for the fact that you have borrowed money for them.
I need to get a Swiss mortgage.
And
chocolate.
Well, first thing you have to do is move to Switzerland and then serve your time in the military in the Switzerland and then have your automated, your automatic weapon in your closet.
Cuckoo clocks. It might be. No, I like America too much. Sorry.
Well, at any rate, the fact that the Italians have just borrowed money at a negative interest rate. Boy, that messes with my mind.
It's way beyond Alice in your old land. Yeah, it's not disinflation anymore over there. It isn't. It's deflation. In its true sense.
In essence, what that says is, by the way, the United States has reintroduced the 2-year note this month.
Would you ever like to be at that cocktail party? I would like to introduce you to the 2-year note.
Only the Treasury can do that. You can't introduce a 2-year. Only the Secretary of the Treasury can. So Lou introduced the 2-year note back into the market this month. And our 2-year note is, by the way, at 0.073%.
0.073%.
No, I'm sorry. 0.73%, not 0.0. It's 0.73%. So if you borrow, if you loan your money to the United States government, they're going to pay you 0.73% a year for each year.
Well, that's about as much as the banks do. It's not bad at all.
It isn't. But what does this say? Now, first off, the people who actually buy these at auction are not unsophisticated. I love that. Not unsophisticated.
That's a double negative. So what you're saying is they're sophisticated.
They are sophisticated, but it's much, much, much more cool sounding to say.
They are not unsophisticated.
It's rather like the fact that data is a plural.
Right.
So you're supposed to use the plural.
Datum.
Datum is singular.
Yes.
So you say
the datum is correct. Yeah.
You say those data.
Those data.
Not that. Not that data.
And this datum.
Right. Right. These data. Anyway, only really not unsophisticated people say these data.
I think non-unsophisticated, because not is too common. You must use non-unsophisticated.
Anti-unsophisticated?
Well, that'd be against the...
Oh, they are, believe me.
We're the only ones that think that's funny.
Yeah, we're silly. But the point is that what that says about the people who make these purchases on the international market, they do actually function in the... Since we haven't talked about the currency, they actually do function in the currency markets.
Yeah.
is these relatively sophisticated people whose livelihood and perhaps life, in the case of, for instance, the Chinese sovereign fund.
Livelihood and lifelihood.
Likelihood of being alive. have concluded is that the euro has further to fall, A. B, the Germans are not going to let the Italians go bankrupt in the next 2 years. And C, the United States economy is relatively stable, and the dollar will probably continue to appreciate in value across the world.
For a while.
For the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Now, actually, as you go out into longer maturities, things become a little more sane, but not much. However, the indicators, again, are once you get out there to 10 years, for example, that we are probably the country that is going to still be here 10 years from now.
Hopefully.
And our currency will be stronger 10 years from now than it is today. That's what the people who make the bids on the bond market, the bond bidders.
And we know how right they are. Sometimes they are.
Well,
sometimes they're not.
More often than not, they are. So we have a caller on 773-1400. You are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Once again, if this is Letitia Knight, press 1 now. If this is not Letitia Knight, please press 2 now.
Okay, I want to press 2. I want to press 2.
If you need some time to bring Letitia Knight to the phone, please press 1. If Letitia Knight is not available, press 2. If we call, hello, we have a message from...
That sounded like a bill collector.
That was a robocall.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So who do you think would put the phone number to the radio station on
their credit application? No, that's not the question. Letitia Knight clearly was the person who put phone number of the radio station on her. The question is, who loaned her money?
The Italians. The Italians loaned her money. Well, this could be
No. The Italians are very sophisticated.
This could be someone else. This could be if this person put the radio station phone number on the credit application, that may not be the right name either.
We don't know.
But not knowing doesn't stop us. We can speculate.
But we can say that a person who's known as Letitia Knight.
Uh-huh.
Probably borrowed some money from somebody.
Could be, yeah.
And probably put the radio station. Well, it's one thing to not to mess up on, you know, when somebody puts a wrong telephone number down. It's another thing for somebody who doesn't exist or who's using a false name to borrow the money. That's a little more interesting.
Happen. It could happen. I mean, using somebody else's name.
Generally speaking, they at least run a background credit check real quickly to see if that person actually exists.
Hopefully.
But that was a fascinating call.
Yeah.
We should have just let it run.
Well, then we would have heard some type of private information, and we had just confirmed that we were whoever this person claimed
to be.
No, I was saying no.
I hit 2, which is no, I am not Letitia Knight. No, do not give me this information. If they want to give the information after we have properly disclosed that we are not Letitia Knight.
That's true. It's true.
That is their business, not our business.
And we still hung up on them.
That wasn't
very which nice. I'm sure Letitia Knight would have done anyway. I'm not sure.
Wait a minute. You don't know. Letitia may be a very legitimate person who wishes to repay her debts.
By answering through the radio.
She could have merely made a mistake and thought that the personal wealth coach had the same telephone number she did, so she should write that one down. Or she could have been listening to
us. Speaking of paying bills, though, we have some commercials to play so that Town Square can pay their bills.
Okay, if you say so. All right, well, we're going to play some commercials, and we'll be back, hopefully, on the other side of playing the commercials with more of the personal wealth coach. And on the other side of the commercials, if you'd like to give us a call and you want to not talk to Letitia Knight, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And as the gubernator said last night as I was watching his movie, I'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach starring Jeff and Wait a minute. I know. I heard you.
Hello.
Oh.
Okay.
You had to bang on the mic.
Again.
Yes.
I think the... Yeah.
You're coming in broken and stupid. Anyway,
How's that? Is that better?
You sound much more intelligent.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Much more elucidated or something like
yes.
that.
Yes. Now, Jake is what I was supposed to be saying there because
yes.
it is my name.
Right. And you can tell us apart because my plaid shirt is dark and flannel.
Mine is more yellow in color. It's plaid, though. So
right.
I realize it's confusing out there that we're both wearing plaid today. But
I have the gray beard. He has the mostly brown beard that's
right.
starting to turn gray.
Right.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You were on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Good morning. I would like your help in becoming a high-information voter. And it has to do with the Federal Reserve. I hear the politicians talk about so much. So maybe we ought to audit these people and find out where this money's going. Could you all tell me why we don't have an audit?
We do.
Of that
we
large do. Financial institution
we
and
do.
What good it might do if we did one.
Okay.
We do have an audit.
We have
a large financial
institution. There's a quarterly audit, and it's done by a major accounting firm. It's just not done by Congress. Congress feels like they should audit it as well.
Some members of Congress.
Right.
The issue in Congress auditing it is the camel's nose under the tent.
Oh.
A lot of members of Congress, well... Not a lot, but a significant number, a significant minority, and mainly I think it's concentrated in the Freedom Caucus, that minority, wish to take control of the Federal Reserve. Because fundamentally, if you kind of drill down into what they've said about it in speeches back in their districts, fundamentally they wish to abolish the Federal Reserve.
So there are major accounting firms that come in regularly to audit, but the government itself also audits
yes,
the Federal Reserve.
It does.
The Government Accountability Office conducts numerous reviews of the Federal Reserve.
So it's not like they're not being audited. It's like a congressional committee is not auditing them. And if you ever listen to congressional investigation of almost anything that has any political significance, you'll discover that their definition of an audit and everybody else's definition of an audit are somewhat different.
Here's a really simple way of looking at it. The Federal Reserve is a private institution that was mandated by the government. They said that banks needed some way of regulating themselves. But in order to give this power to the banks... They said that the president needed to be able to appoint the head, the chairman, and the Senate confirm, and several of the other members of the board as well, to go in the assistant to the chairman, and it's the vice chairman, and Janet mm-hmm. Yellen was the vice chairman for a while. So, and they are the ones that kind of have the final say there. So they step in and they do this. But the idea here is that we're trying to remove the stability of our currency, that thing that we call the dollar, from out of the short-term political views of Congress. Congress is in office in the House of Representatives for 2 years. And by being
right.
in, they need to get reelected a lot. They need to bring home the bacon. And there's some easy ways of doing that. There's some easy ways of making a stink if you've got a short-term view. Then there's the Senate. And the Senate by itself, by the way, comes from the Latin. And it's the same word for sin. It means old. S-E-N. It means old. So senile is also old. So, but senis is to age, to be old. It's supposed to mean wisdom. They're in for 6 years so that they don't have to change on the whim of the public at any given moment. They can make harder decisions and not feel like they're going to lose their election next time around.
In 1908, and then a series of successive votes by the Congress, laws passed. The Federal Reserve Act was first passed, and then it's been amended on a number of occasions. And the Federal Reserve Act, very wisely, was set up the Federal Reserve Board as independent of the political system. And matter of fact, the dates upon which the president is required to either nominate or renominate members, the appointed members. The rest of them, by the way, are elected by the banks. is set up to avoid being in the middle of a political cycle. And the, for example, there's very little question that George H.W. Bush lost his reelection campaign because the Federal Reserve raised interest rates.
Right. And
there's,
in fact,
very little question that Jimmy Carter was defeated largely because of that same reason.
Yeah, we actually heard Alan Greenspan speak about this. George H.W. Bush, in the run-up to his reelection, went to Alan Greenspan and said, I appointed you. Is there some way you can put off the raising of interest rates till after the election? Because, you know, I appointed you, and I think you're doing a great job. For you to raise interest rates right now would make it look like I'm doing a bad job when you're doing a good job. And Alan Greenspan said, that's not why you appointed me. You appointed me to protect the currency, not to get you reelected. And because of that, Bill, go ahead.
Is this why right now I'm reading in the news that the Federal Reserve is unwilling to raise interest rates even a small amount because they think it will influence the next election?
No. In fact,
whoever said that is not.
That they don't understand the Federal Reserve. Well, Janet Yellen is apolitical. She's you know, if you look at who's been our chairman of the Federal Reserve going back as far as you want to go, the people involved, they may or may not vote, but it's unlikely. They're supposed to be separated from the political system. So when Janet Yellen didn't raise interest rates this last time around, it's because we had lower growth in our employment, and the inflation numbers are close to deflation. And if you raise interest rates there, you get deflation, which is bad.
If you want to know why the Federal Reserve raised or didn't raise interest rates, just simply read their notes and their minutes, and they will tell you why they didn't raise interest rates. That doesn't
one
keep
more,
a lot
one
of people.
One more question, and I'll get off the air. Is not the Federal Reserve the highest debtor to which our government owes money, more than even China or Japan?
No, it is not.
It isn't?
What is the amount we owe? The Federal Reserve from all.
We can break it down, but the number one debtor to the United States government is the United States.
Number one creditor.
The number one creditor to the United States government is the United States government. If you talk about Social Security, Medicare, and all that good stuff, which is on the books,
but they
would be the number one. Number two
is the public,
and the largest percentage of the public debt as a whole, it's not a majority, but the largest, is owned by the Federal Reserve.
And then number three is
the
people of the United States.
Would that be in the nature of $3.2 trillion, or is that figure wrong?
Vaguely in the right area.
One of
the things you need to take into account here is part of what the Federal Reserve Act did, and it's been amended since then so they can do other things, was tell the Federal Reserve that they should buy and sell federal debt, Treasury securities. And they have been doing that all along, and there are times when they are huge net creditors of the United States. There are times when they're very small net creditors of the United States. But this is a key element. The Federal Reserve is sort of like your spleen. And you can survive without the spleen, but it sure makes life difficult.
Yes.
What happens is your body manufactures more blood than you need if you're not bleeding. And it stores it in the spleen so that if you lose blood, like when you go to give a pint of blood, presuming that you do that, I just got through doing it, that pint of the volume of blood in your circulatory system does not decrease because the spleen releases a pint of blood over about a 24 to 48 hour period back into your bloodstream. And the Federal Reserve does the same thing. When there is too much money in the system and we get, as a result, inflation, which is equivalent of high blood pressure, then the Federal Reserve pulls money out of the system effectively. And there's a mechanism they use to do that because of the buying and selling of bonds. And as they pull the money out of the system and by charging interest rates, then the money goes onto their books and it sits there and there is a absolutely staggering quantity of money sitting on their books that they pulled out of the system during the Volcker era. they can pump money back into the system as it is needed if it suddenly disappears. Sucking, I mean, like we had the equivalent of our jugular vein cut.
Right. All the mortgages.
In 2008 and 9.
Yeah, all those mortgages that didn't get paid back, all those foreclosures, means that that money is no longer in the system. Someone borrowed the money and then didn't pay it back. That means the money disappeared. We get deflation from that. So we had to, the Federal Reserve had to add money back into the system to fill it back up, and it didn't quite get back up to where it was before from the Federal Reserve. What's they're being very careful about is if they raise interest rates, it makes it harder to get loans, which makes it harder to have more money in the system.
Frankly, the guy who deserves the Nobel Peace Prize, in my opinion, and by very, very studied opinion,
right,
is Dr. Bernanke. Yeah. I mean,
Bernanke deserves the Peace Prize for sure. Maybe the Nobel Prize in economy.
He went way outside the box. Actions, by the way, that were not against the law at the time, perfectly legal at the time, but have been restricted so that he can't do it again in the recent past. But what happened was, he kept the entire financial system in the world and the banks from collapsing. Historically, when that has happened, and it has happened on quite a number of occasions, we end it with a depression and a war. So he basically prevented World War III. And the Federal Reserve is doing a superb job. I'm just, you know, people like to snipe at them and they like to complain about them, but I think they're doing a wonderful job.
Their job is not to market themselves. They don't do that. And it is not the job of them to do that. And because it's not their job, they're an easy target. If you're in a political race and you can point at a group and you say, people don't understand what they do, they don't talk good about themselves, I'm going to throw mud at them for a little bit to get some kudos for myself. It's kind of schoolyard bullying.
But we've got to break for news.
Yeah.
So thanks for your call.
So
thank you for your information.
Okay, bye-bye.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, we will be back next hour. Until then, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach. And if you'd like to contact us off the air, it's 947-1111 or 1-800-914-7526. Until next hour, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood, the best talk in America. News Radio 1400 KTEM.